We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
1-2 pitch. Hit in the air, deep left field. Going back is Jimenez on the warning track. He has room, but he drops it. And it is a fair ball, and it rolls into the corner. Yelich is around second. He's headed for third, and he's going to try to make this an inside the park home run. The throw home, not in time. Yelich with an inside the park home run, and the Brewers have tied it at two. Jimenez tracked that all the way to the line in the left field corner. He couldn't make the catch. He ended up falling into the extended netting down that left field line and got caught up in it. And by that point, Yelich was around second and headed for third. And he wasn't even running that hard out of the box. And he was still able to make it an inside the park home run. How about that? I just had said he's going to put one over the wall. I didn't mean Eloy Jimenez.
The extended netting saved Eloy Jimenez.
I didn't know he was going to go into the netting. Yeah.
Okay. It might have been nice to actually say as the play is going on that he was caught in the netting and not after the fact, but it's a quibble. That was WTMJ. We initially played the better call of that, and it was Jason Benetti and Steve Stone as it was all unfolding on our television screens. Jason Benetti is on Twitter at Jason Benetti, and the voice of the White Sox joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Well, that was kind of a thing.
Yeah, it was. As I've watched it a bunch of times because everybody has tweeted at me a number of times with thanks, Cubs. So thank you all for that on Twitter. Yes, I do see it. And yes, you all are individually funny. What I would say is the thing that intrigued me most, and I know it was a ridiculous play, and nobody's wrong in saying that that's a play that, you know, should be made and all of that. The juxtaposition of Eloy Jimenez's confidence in literally every other facet of the game of baseball, even base running, and his easy power at the plate and the way he carries himself. And then you watch him run for a fly ball, and he's kind of picking his way. And it's the only part of the game of baseball where he's picking his way through stuff. And I, number one, feel for him, but I, number two, I wonder what's in there. Like, it does make me think that there is more in him as a left fielder because of that juxtaposition of the high confidence everywhere else. And that's not me over-defending somebody who I like. It really is. If you watch him and the air that he has about every other part of the game, if that ever got there in left field, I do think there's a much better left fielder in there.
Really? I'm wondering what
I do.
When do the White Sox internally start to have the difficult conversations about the future and what's right for him, what's right for them? Because I, as I mentioned to start the show, I looked at this two ways. Yeah, that was funny. And it is funny. People running into things is funny because it's slapstick comedy. It's also a person and a valuable asset who could be endangering himself and endangering other assets. I don't want him to hurt Luis Robert.
No, nobody does. And nobody wants him to hurt himself again in the outfield. But as somebody who runs into things routinely in life, too, it is funny when people run into stuff. It's funny when I run into things. But, here's the thing about internal discussions. I feel like baseball teams have these discussions behind closed doors all the time. Where can this person be long term? Like, where I think those are ongoing, regardless of how good somebody is at their position. I really do. Unless you're an ace stud, like, control your position, you're that good at it. I mean, it happened with Yoan Moncada, right? Like, he looked confused at second base, and then you put him at third, and there's that confidence again, and he's got that swagger and coming in on balls we've talked about. I mean, it's a totally different deal. And so that's why, as I look at the confidence, I do understand why people say that there's more upside in left field with Eloy Jimenez than what's out there right now, because, you know, with any undertaking, as confidence grows, you just get better at it. And once you start getting better at it, the confidence grows. You watch him approaching that ball, it's not the same guy as we see in the other facets. So, yeah, I do believe in teaching in that regard. But I also do believe that, you know, it's the sand falls from the hourglass quicker in baseball than it does in other enterprises that involve self-improvement.
Do they have an outfielding coach?
I believe it's not a specific outfielding coach, but Daryl Boston is the guy that I've heard is designated to work with the outfielders, and you'll see him out there hitting fly balls to outfielders and things like that. So Debo is the guy that I've seen work most with the outfielders.
The pitching depth could end up being an issue one way or another, and it's never fun to watch the pitching depth become an issue. But when Gio Gonzalez has this very thin margin for error now, he doesn't have great stuff, and it's got to be just right. And at some point, you want to make sure you don't have to see pitching depth exposed when you know it likely will over time. How do they get ahead of it?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of what day do we want to burn the bullpen sort of stuff. As I was watching that game unfold, and we're talking about third time through and numbers like that, you also look and you say, okay, well, you got a young guy on the mound and Cease tomorrow, and then you have a TBA on Saturday. And so I think it's like determining, trying to siphon off an extra couple batters here and an extra couple batters there, because I think best case scenario, Ricky Renteria is probably looking at that and saying, if I can burn my bullpen that doesn't need to get used in the next couple days, we might see Gio Gonzalez come out of the game earlier last night, maybe. And that's conjecture. I can't be in the clubhouse like I normally am. But I think the way you get through it is by mixing and matching a bullpen and trying to ask somebody like Ross Detweiler to do as much as he can in terms of soaking up as many outs as he can in moments where you can get away with it. I think part of that burden too, Dan, honestly, and it's unfair, but I think part of the burden's on the offense. Because if the offense has a couple of big games when a starting pitcher is struggling and you're up 8-4 or something like that in the fifth inning, it gives you a little bit of a window where you can use some of these less experienced guys in closer to high leverage situations because you have a little bit of a cushion.
With Edwin Encarnacion out, we were talking about the problem to have with the two good catchers, you know, an all-star and McCann, and then you add Grandal. I guess it kind of takes care of itself that you can get his bat in the lineup as a DH.
You know, I hate the baseball maxim. It all evens out. It all works out. But darn if it doesn't. Like,
right.
Like you're looking at it, and you're like, how are they going to – and we're 13 games in, and you have your answer. And there's always some answer in some way. So I think, yeah, I think that's what it ends up being. And I do believe, you know, based on what we saw last year, if James McCann's playing like 5 out of every 7 days instead of 7 out of 7 days, I think that's best case scenario for him and for the team. And then for Grandal, getting him a day off every once and again too. So yeah, if there's somebody missing in this lineup and you can plug Leury Garcia into their hole and then backfill the DH with one of those catchers, that's a really good case scenario for the Sox to have.
Yeah, I mentioned this with Steve Stone when he was on. Leury Garcia is on my list of players taken for granted. Because if you talk about being able to plug him in anywhere from center field to shortstop, pretty much anything but pitcher or catcher, where he can play some sort of credible Major League Baseball, it gives you some glue and it backstops what otherwise would be a real depth problem.
I have to say, too, every ball he's played at shortstop recently that I can remember, every ground ball he's played, he looked really good doing it, too. Like, to the point where you're like, oh, okay, you know, he's more than serviceable at shortstop. The backhand play he made and the arm he showed last night was pretty impressive. And so, yeah, he's luxurious in a way that luxury usually doesn't present itself.
Luxurious, interesting adjective for a baseball player. And you say you hate the baseball maxim of everything works out. I also hate the fact that I have to look at a weekend series against the Indians followed by three more against the Tigers and use the term, through gritted teeth, critical stretch.
Yeah, but I've been measuring that all season long because you start with six against the Indians and Twins. And if you go 0-6, you're a 10th through the season and you're way behind. I just think we have to say the 2020 season is a critical stretch. And then we step back from it and we say, probably doesn't matter all that much in terms of the long-term growth of the rebuild of the Sox. So, yeah, I think but the thing is, the Sox won six in a row and now are 7-6. So, like, yeah, that helps you stay afloat. But it really is, to me, it's how you play the last 3 weeks of the season that are going to be most imperative, because just about everybody's going to be in a playoff race at that point. Our eyes are going to be drawn and magnetized to these last couple of weeks because every game really is going to matter, I think.
It's fun to watch how that affects managerial decisions and lineup decisions too, because my system isn't like calibrated correctly yet. I don't know how sad to be with losses and how excited to be with wins and individual moments in games, because regular season games are still regular season games to me. So, you know, obviously you're in a different position where it's your responsibility to convey that and match that proper sense of urgency in your tone. And that's got to feel really weird to always be assessing it.
Well, it's especially weird because managers don't have it calibrated completely either. I mean, baseball, we've talked about this before, baseball had become sort of a uniform game in terms of decision-making with outliers here and there. But last night, you know, Ricky Renteria is trying to help out his bullpen by getting a couple extra outs with Gio Gonzalez, while you have Craig Counsell on the other side of the field who pinch hit in the third inning early in the series in Milwaukee for his leadoff hitter. And he's playing matchups to that level of granular detail. And so you have one manager who's basically saying, look, I need to get these couple of outs to help myself for the long term. And the other manager is saying, absolutely, right now in the moment, this guy, that guy, this guy. And I don't really blame either of them for their decision making with the rationale in front of them. But when you watch all 30 teams, you gather that nobody really has a structure for this. So as we're trying to convey the game, is it a big game? Is it a big moment? I don't know yet, but I do know that they all count for 2.7. So yeah, I'm trying to be a little bit more urgent with each outcome. But I have to say too, that's pretty easy for us, because in my tenure with the Sox, there have not been a lot of big moments. Like my first couple weeks when the Sox opened 8-2 and like 21-10 in 2016, that was the best I've had it in the standings in terms of developing the story of a season. So it's different for Stoney and me. Like, I felt totally different Monday, Tuesday with how much strategy was going on in those games. And I think that just that comes through easily because we enjoy watching it together.
Meanwhile, Yasmani Grandal is slumping. Any concern?
Not really. As Stoney was talking about, there have been some good at-bats there. I think he swung at the ball more out of the zone early than expected, than is his career number. I think I haven't looked at his O-swing percentage recently, but I do believe he's doing it more than is typical for him. And I wonder if it's the new team thing or whatever it might be. I don't know when to get worried. So, like, I don't have an answer for you, but I'm not, based on some of the at-bats I've seen.
And Nomar Mazara is okay or not? He came back, and now he was hurt again.
Yeah, I got hit by the pitch last night and then came out of the game. So I don't have a report, but I'm sure we'll hear today. It didn't look like one of those that you say, panic, dire straits. But I've been wrong before. It was the ball off the leg last night.
And members of Dire Straits. This is an odd question.
Sultans of swing.
But baseball is a multi-sensory experience. Is it strange that Guaranteed Rate Field doesn't smell like grilled onions?
I'm so glad you asked me that, because I thought people thought I was nuts. When I first got the job, people said, well, what's it like? And I said, the ballpark smells the same. It was literally the first thing that I noticed when I walked into the park my first day on the job. So, yeah, it's bizarre. And honestly, people have asked, like, people who want to do stories on remote broadcasting have come to me and asked, and Stoney and everybody around the league, and asked, hey, what's it like to do these road games? I actually feel more comfortable doing the games off the monitor than I do doing games from the home ballpark. It's like the West Wing episode called Half Measures. Like, you're sitting in a ballpark where you're used to having fans and bustle, and it's not happening. I'd almost rather be in fantasy land and watch it off a monitor, because we just turn off our brains completely on the enterprise that it could be out on the field. And so, yeah, it's a little eerie to be around the ballpark and have all of these constraints in place and all the differences, whereas if you're doing it off a monitor, it just feels like, hey, everything's the same and you're not there.
And the reason I ask is that I learned this years ago in psychology, that the connection to memory via olfactory sense is stronger than other senses. Memory triggers can come from smells. You know, we get back to sort of the Proustian moment of the Madeleine, the taste and the smell. There really is something to it. There is something about a childhood memory, or something about when, I get it sometimes where after a rainstorm, if there's a certain like melange of like recently mown grass and ozone and wet concrete, there's like it'll take me to a place. You know, sometimes, and my son even said it, where he's like, wait, this smells like camp, and not Rick Camp. And I knew, because I went to the same camp. And I said, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I know exactly where you are right now. There's something that transports you. And for me, one of those for me is the smell of a White Sox game. And if it's not there, that would throw me off.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It's heartbreaking in a way, but it's also hopeful, because if our memories are that strong for senses, especially smell and taste, it's going to come back. And I've been sitting at home and wondering a lot about the day that everything goes back to where it was, even in some regard in a stadium. And if we can have those sensory memories, how strong, like, I just imagine people are going to walk through turnstiles and have like this outpouring of emotion they don't expect.
I agree. I also think it's that masks, while 100% absolutely necessary and life-saving for public health, they also take away some of that sensory experience wherever we are with a mask on.
It's totally true. I mean, I get why people don't like having their face covered for their personality. Like, I personally, if you try to read me based only on my eyes, I am winning every poker tournament, because nobody has any idea where they're going. Like, no clue. So yeah, it's a sincere disadvantage for anybody trying to figure out what I'm thinking when I have a mask on. However, it's totally necessary. We all know that. But yeah, those small flecks of detail are important. They really, really, really are. And I don't want people to ever lose that. And so as people are sitting at home watching the games, I hope they're thinking about what they've done in the ballpark before. Because I don't want to get too sappy, but like, the messages I was getting sent from people when all of this started, the specific memories people have of going to the ballpark, made me realize that this enterprise has a lot more interwoven in people's hearts than even I knew. And I've got memories of going to sporting events with family and friends, and really silly memories and fun memories and dark memories and all of that. But boy, like when people say baseball can heal, what they mean is it can bring back those senses. And I'm glad you mentioned the sensory experience, because it will be there and it will be vivid. I mean, I don't say this in like a, I went to Syracuse sort of way, but when you go to Syracuse University, like 9 months of the year are gray, and then 2 more months, it might snow just because. But there is that 1 month, there's that first day, and it's usually in like early April or late March when it's sunny and 80. And the quad, it's like carnival. I mean, it's ridiculous. Everybody is outside running around, playing Frisbee, doing whatever you do. And it's this one day. It's like a holiday. It's an unsanctioned holiday. And when everybody can start to move about the world again, as we do, I cannot wait for that day.
You asked for numbers on Yasmani Grandal and what he's swinging at and why and how that compares. So tell me what you think this means. His O swing percentage, which would be outside the zone, if I'm not mistaken, is currently at 24.2%, which is reasonably close to his career 24.7. His Z swing percentage is at 49.4. His career is 60.9. So his total swing percentage is down nearly 7%. It just in general, he usually swings at a 40% rate. He's swinging overall at a 34.3% rate. Now, here's what's also interesting is the contact rate is down. His contact rate outside the zone is at 53.1 compared to a career 61.6. His contact rate in the zone is at 79.1, which is down from a career 83.8. Overall contact percentage is 68, down from 75.9 career. What does that tell you?
It tells me that I'm being blinded by the swing and miss out of the zone. My eyes are seeing that. But I go back to Yoan Moncada, and if you look at his Z-swing percentage from 2 years ago compared to last year when the Sox drilled into him, you have to be aggressive and swing at strikes early. I want to say it's like a 7% jump in Z swing percentage. And that's a massive move for him, which I think totally changed his fortunes. Like that's the number I have circled on his page from 2 years ago to this year. So it's we're talking like 2 swings a game here. But if you don't swing at strikes in Major League Baseball, I mean, that's the number that was so mind-boggling to me about the Twins early last year. I think it was like 2 months into the season when the Sox saw the Twins. I ran on Baseball Savant the slugging percentage on balls in the zone, and the Twins were by far the best team in baseball at that point on slugging percentage, balls in the zone. You have to hit strikes in this league, and you have to slug strikes, or else it's just not going to happen. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense based on what my eyes have seen. But I also think there's a little bit of a swing and miss smokescreen that's making me think he's chasing more, when instead he's not chasing more. He's just missing more when he's chasing.
Jason Benetti, always a treat. Continued good health. We will be listening to the broadcast as we go. It's back in action tonight as they take on the Cleveland baseball team.
Dan, thank you.
Jason Benetti, always fun to have on. When we come back, I want to talk about an incident that occurred and the explanations that don't really make any sense. It involves the bench coach of the Oakland Athletics making a certain gesture that he shouldn't have made. And it's really more, I think, about the reaction of the player who noticed it first. I want to talk about that next on The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Fail pitch, line to second, and this should be a game-ending double play, and it is. Chu gets caught off on the line drive, and that's how the ball game ends. And when you're hot, that's what happens.
That's how the ball game ends, but then it's what happened afterward that was not so good. The closer, Liam Hendricks, for the Athletics, was walking toward the home dugout after his save. And one of the guys waiting for him was Oakland Athletics bench coach Ryan Christensen. And we've seen different post-game celebrations in our times that are safely distant, that aren't necessarily hugs or high fives. We've seen the toe taps. We've seen the air fives that the Cubs do, where they kind of jump up and down and just sort of push their hands at each other. Well, Ryan Christensen decided to do something a little different, and that was make a Nazi salute. Picture your classic, indisputable, unmistakable Sieg Heil, with hand thrust in the air like we saw in Charlottesville and like we saw at any Richard Spencer gathering. That's just that it was back in fashion for a while to make the unmistakable Nazi salute. And that's what he did. And he said he wasn't doing it intentionally. Well, I don't know if it's just a muscle spasm or what makes him do it. He was thrusting his arm straight out and hand straight with his arm in the air. And here's the official statements from Ryan Christensen and the Oakland Athletics. This is the bench coach. I made a mistake and will not deny it. Today in the dugout, I greeted players with a gesture that was offensive. In the world today of COVID, I adopted our elbow bump, which we do after wins, to create some distance with the players. My gesture unintentionally resulted in a racist and horrible salute that I do not believe in. What I did is unacceptable, and I deeply apologize. Okay, a couple things here. You can't blame you making a Nazi salute on COVID. That is not the fault of a virus. At least he admits, and it's not a mistake. I mean, you chose to do it. Here's the statement from the team. A's bench coach Ryan Christensen greeted players with a gesture that looked like a Nazi salute. Because it was one. It didn't just look like one. That is what the Nazi salute is. We do not support or condone this gesture or the racist sentiment behind it. This is incredibly offensive, especially in these times when we as a club and so many others are working to expose and address racial inequalities in our country. We are deeply sorry this happened on our playing field. And Liam Hendricks, who I think is kind of more the story here, he texted the beat reporter Susan Slusser, said, I know Ryan Christensen. What happened today was in no way a reflection of who he is. Well, perhaps not. But you remember the time when famously at Wrigley Field, Rick Monday ran out and kept two protesters from burning an American flag. And he was it was sort of hailed as this amazing rescue gesture, when we maybe thought a little bit differently about peaceful protest and asking what they're protesting and why and what's valid and what isn't, that he's like, here's Rick Monday saving America. What Liam Hendricks did when he saw his coach do that was grab his arm and push it down. That was heroic. Because you think about how easily a baseball player could have either claimed to not see it or have seen it and said, oh, you know, I just got the save. I was kind of in my head at that point. It's not something I'm thinking about. I'm not aware of that kind of. For him to have the awareness in the moment, he just saved a game, and he's coming off the field. And Liam Hendricks immediately recognized it and grabbed his coach's arm at a time where there isn't even supposed to be physical contact. Grabbed his coach's arm and pushed it down. So that's something for his natural reaction to be not only to after the fact say, yeah, I didn't like it when I saw it, it made me uncomfortable, but to make it stop and not just say something to him. And thank you, a correction, the Rick Monday flag rescue was, he was a Dodger at that point. Yes, at Dodger Stadium. For him to do that needs to be applauded. It needs to be recognized, which I'm doing, and it needs to be applauded because it would have been so easy for a player not to do it and then ask him, hey, coach, come on. Or even say, hey, coach, you know, put your arm down. That's a bad look. You know you're doing the Nazi salute, right? His gut response, he was so bothered by it, that Liam Hendricks was so bothered by it that he physically stopped him from doing it. And that's kind of cool. I would hope that would be the reaction. I don't think it would be. And that's the reason why I think it was notable to me was that most players wouldn't do that. Most players either wouldn't know or would know but not be thinking about where the camera might be and how it would look and wouldn't be thinking about it and how they would care. And the fact is he did it a second time. So for him to the overall lack of awareness on the part of Ryan Christensen is alarming. For him to either not know or not care. So kudos to Liam Hendricks for doing something important that I think really deserves proper recognition. So good on him for doing that. The Midday Midway is coming up. And I want to relive a childhood favorite thing because of a world record that was just broken. It had me thinking about things. Also, a very lucky or talented miner, 49er, no, a Tanzanian miner, has found something very valuable, but it's the details of the story that are very interesting. And a story, sometimes you want to do a story just for the headline. And the headline is Naked German Sunbather Chases Wild Boar. That's what we're doing. All of those stories next in the Midday Midway on The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
Here we are at the Midday Midway. We began the show talking baseball, having some fun with Eloy Jimenez's adventure into the netting. And we had fun with it and then took it seriously because he's got to stop doing that. He has to stop running into things. He can't run into inanimate objects or animate objects because he could hurt himself or he could hurt Luis Robert or he could hurt somebody. It's got to stop. And I hope they can find a way to fix that if they're going to try to salvage him as a left fielder. Mark Cannizzaro joined us to talk about the PGA Championship. He is live on site at Harding Park, walked around with Tiger. He assessed the chances of Brooks Koepka and others and says he really thinks that Xander Schauffele might be the guy who's lurking on that leaderboard right now. I had a bit of an animated episode discussing what's going on with the Bulls and Jim Boylan because I'm pissed off about it and I'm disappointed in how this seems to be going down, even though it seems like Casey Johnson pushed back a little bit and the reporting of Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times, where Cowley feels that at the moment it looks like Jim Boylan's going to be back because of financial reasons and because of continued backbiting and power games that are occurring that were supposed to be over with the hiring of Arturis Karnishevas, and I have to do this without getting myself worked up again. But somebody's got to say something. Someone has to tell us why this is happening. Someone has to take ownership of the retention of Jim Boylan. Whether it's the ownership level saying Arturis isn't in charge, we are, this is our decision, or Arturis Karnishevas saying it is my decision, I want him back, it is my choice, I run the basketball operations, and I choose Jim Boylan despite what my players say, despite what anybody wants. I know that he's the best coach to lead the Bulls. He's got to say it if that's going to be the case. Somebody has to. Jason Benetti talked some in-depth White Sox with us, and we talked about the incident in Oakland last night, the unfortunate Nazi salute that was given after the game by their bench coach, and what was and what wasn't, and just the job that Liam Hendricks did coming off having just gotten the save. He got another save in actually grabbing his coach's arm and forcing it downward. The headline's great, and the still photos are even better. Because the headline said, naked sunbather chases wild boar through park after it steals his laptop bag. And there... it's at a nude bathing spot near Berlin. And this guy is running after this wild boar trying to claim his plastic bag. The boar and the piglets appear to be too quick for the sunbather, who can't keep up with their speedy little trotters. And as the incident unfolds, groups of friends and family sat on the grass to watch and laugh, and heads are seen turning in surprise and amusement at the hilarious photograph. Here's why it's so great. Not only is he nude, he is a fat. So, and it's like all belly. It's just this, it's a big, old, fat, naked man chasing a boar and two other piglets.
That is the unmistakable body of a man whose weight is 100% beer-based.
Like, well, he's German.
beer and sauce. I mean, that is the unmistakable body of a beer drinker.
All right, I'm putting the link to these pictures in the Twitch feed right now. I'm posting them. I guess I'm barely...
You're going to get banned.
Oh, I am? Can they ban me? I'm a moderator. So I don't really know what I'm doing in the live stream right now on Twitch, but I'm on Twitch. Actually, it's Bernstein Show DB, and I think there's a little moderator sword on that. I don't know what I'm doing, so please bear with me on Twitch. But occasionally, like I do this, I know we put stuff in the Twitter feed and stuff elsewhere, and I can now use Twitch to share things with you in this chat. So I don't know if I'm doing anything correctly. It's going to take me some time to get used to it, because during the show I'm keeping track of so many things. But we are on Twitch, so come join us at twitch.tv, Chicago 670, The Score. I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun. So I just put those pictures in there for you to get a look at.
Now I'm all for naked people.
You're four naked? That's a lot of naked people.
No, I'm all four naked people.
He's all four. He's not two. He's not three. He is all four of those naked people. This is from CBS News. A small-scale miner in Tanzania who had become an overnight millionaire over a month ago when he unearthed two of the biggest rough Tanzanite gemstones ever found has struck it rich again, digging up a third stone weighing 13 pounds. With an estimated value of $2 million. The three stones were discovered by Seninu Laser, L-I-L-A-I-Z-E-R. So this is, it's amazing. It's like they have their own gem named after their country. It's like a real life Wakanda, right? What's the name of the element? It's not adamantium, it's not unobtainium. Why is it not popping into my mind? What's the name of the magical element from Wakanda? The first two stones have an estimated value of $3.4 million. After the first discovery, Laser, a father of more than 30 children, told the BBC, "There will be a big party tomorrow." And my first thought, I saw 30 kids. That's a lot of college. He's going to have to find more stones, because that's a lot of... It's actually cool what he's doing with this. It's Tanzanite, with a deep violet-blue color, is found only in the East African country and is considered to be one of the rarest gemstones on Earth. He waved the large stone over his head before handing it over to Tanzanian government officials who gave him a check to purchase it. He said, "I am begging my fellow miners that we should be patriotic by adhering to rule and regulations, committing ourselves to work hard, that we prosper." He said this in Swahili, referring to regulations that Tanzanite stones should be sold directly to the government rather than illegal traders. And according to the Minister for Mines, Dato Biteko, "We Tanzanians have decided that minerals should first benefit us as a country. We've had enough of selling our gems to others who benefit while our communities remain poor." So Laser told the BBC he plans to use the money to invest in his community in Manyara. He said, "I want to build a shopping mall and a school. I want to build this school near my home. There are many poor people around here who can't afford to take their children to school." He said, "I'm not educated, but I like things run in a professional way. I would like my children," I got 30 of them, "I would like my children to run the business professionally." He told the BBC he would not change his lifestyle. He planned to continue looking after his 2,000 cows. A lot of cows, a lot of kids, a lot of cows. But that's very cool that he actually is going to vibranium. Thank you. Thank you very much, Texters. Vibranium. But actually, there is Tanzanite in Tanzania, and he is doing good things for his community. I saw this story, too, and I kind of got some warm, nostalgic feelings. An Australian radio host set up a Hot Wheels track on a rural road and broke a Guinness World Record by making a Hot Wheels car travel down 2,624 feet of track. He had attempted this before at the Taronga Zoo in Sydney and Centennial Park when the toy car failed to stay on the track for the entirety of the run, which needed to break the previous record of 2,176 feet 2 inches set in 2019 in Pennsylvania. Took more than 20 attempts on his third day. But he did it. And I started thinking about Hot Wheels. Somewhere in my parents' basement, there are two soft-sided lunchbox, like vinyl lunchboxes, and inside each one are two what look like the equivalent of ice cube trays, and they contain my Hot Wheels car, or the ones my cousin Adam had stolen from me and claimed are his, which is total BS, because he has two identical, we used to always, like, compete against each other, and then he would just take them and then, like, have squatter's rights on them and insist that they're his when they're not, because I know where the things, like a door that was missing, I know which ones are mine, and he insists they're his, and at some point I'm going to fight him and I'm going to get my actual Hot Wheel cars back. And just how, for us, there was an entire Saturday, or just hours and hours and hours of racing these cars in various Olympics and writing down the results and timing them with an actual analog stopwatch and doing play-by-play. That was our fantasy sports. We didn't have our iPhones and single-day betting opportunities and all these chat rooms and Twitch. And it was so awesome. And I could still remember, if I looked at those cars right now, I could tell you who, like, by top five fastest, top five slowest. We would do like the equivalent of a stimp meter and just sort of let them go. Then there was the launcher thing with the rubber bands where you could turbocharge them. We actually my cousin had this with the gate, like the drag race winner gate, where it actually, if you went through first, it could show you, even if it's like a photo finish, it would actually indicate where something would fall over to that side and tell you who got there first. But were we stupid, or were we easily entertained, or we had no choice? We tried to make it complicated by, like, keeping stats and all of that, and then setting things up more and more difficult tracks with the loop, and you had the one little loop thing where you could take one stretch of track and put it in there. And I don't know where the generational cutoff is for Hot Wheels being, there was Matchbox cars and Hot Wheels, and they were competitors, and we would intermingle. We would co-mingle our Matchbox and our Hot Wheels, but that was a big thing. And, you know, when maybe mom would come home from grocery shopping and say, "Hey, there was a Hot Wheels car there I grabbed for you." I'm like, "Oh, wow." And then you immediately run it through the speed tests of the wind tunnels and everything you had to do to determine, you know, the interloper that came in and all the other cars we look at. Like, "Oh, yeah, who's Hotshot? Who's this new guy? Well, who do you think you are? You know, in this box, in this tray." So I just some warm fuzzies thinking about what Hot Wheels cars meant to those of us of a certain age for whom they had an outsized meaning. And that is the Midday Midway, which we do most days around this time. We've been tracking down Robert Mays, football writer for The Ringer, for a while now. And I've got a whole bunch of Bears stuff for him. Bears have been talking. Bears have been practicing. We're going to hear from some Bears after we hear from Robert Mays. But some in-depth football stuff. Get his opinions on some of the things that are going on with the Bears team, including the opt-out of Eddie Goldman, how they're going to figure out who else could be a wide receiver of some competence beyond Allen Robinson, what the offensive backfield is going to look like in the quarterback competition. Football talk in depth next with Robert Mays on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.